So we're going to start. Madame Bernard, Madame Blais, Madame Morneau, Professor Masi, Professor Fiore and Dr. Williams, Madame et Messieurs, bonjour à tous and thank you to be here. On behalf of the Italian scientific community in Canada, I welcome all of you to this roundtable on the research cooperation and mobility between Italy and Canada. The first idea of this roundtable came to my mind after an exchange of emails with Dr. Gert Williams. Initially, he was supposed to just give a seminar for our association. One day, he told me, I can come with Miss Maria Bernard, Department of Foreign Affairs. And from that day, Gert, you were in trouble. Nous avons réuni des représentants du gouvernement du Canada, du Québec et d'Italie, afin de donner une image complète de la coopération possible entre le Canada et l'Italie. In the last few weeks, while I was talking with the speakers and some friends who work as university professors here in Montreal, I realized that many funding opportunities are available, but these funds are often unknown to many researchers. I really hope that this roundtable will be an occasion to know more, gather more, and connect more. I believe that this event truly represents the spirit of the Italian scientific community in Canada, an association that strives to serve and support international research cooperation and mobility. As Italian researchers working in Canada, we believe that research and scientific cooperation have no borders and nationality, since research promotes culture, development, exchange, and ultimately the well-being of all humankind. I encourage you to contact us. You probably have a bookmark on your seat with our information. And I would like to thank you, every person who has contributed to the organization of this event, from all the volunteers of the association to the staff of the Office of the Provost of McGill who kindly helped us with the logistics of the event. And we're particularly grateful to McGill University for its hospitality. À la fin de la discussion, vous aurez un peu de temps pour poser des questions aux panélistes. S'il vous plaît, n'hésitez pas à les faire en anglais ou en français. At 2:30, I invite you to join us for a coffee and meet the speakers. The refreshments are generously offered by the Provost of McGill, Professor Anthony Masi, who has always been a close friend of the association since the beginning. And Professor Masi is also an enthusiastic promoter of international research exchanges, and we are very proud that he accepted to be the chair of this roundtable. And I'm honored to introduce our speakers to you. Dr. Gert Williams is the director of ERACAN, a joint project between Canada and the European Union. The aim is to build and facilitate connections between European and Canadian researchers and to promote the value of international research through common funding programs. Professor Emanuele Fiore, scientific attaché of the Italian Embassy in Ottawa. He's professor of economy and business strategy at the University Federico II in Naples. Ms. Maria Bernard, trade commissioner of the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade of Canada and leader of the executive project management team with ERACAN. Madame Marie-Josée Blais, directrice de collaboration internationale du Ministère du Développement économique, de l'innovation et de l'exportation du Québec. Madame Carole Morneau, directrice adjointe de relations bilatérales du Agriculture Agroalimentaire du Canada, bureau de la coopération scientifique internationale et point de contact national Food Agriculture and Biotechnology pour le programme F7. Nous sommes également honorés d'avoir ici avec nous Madame Danielle Virone, directrice de la Chambre du commerce italienne à Montréal. Madame Noëlla De Maina, responsable européenne des relations académiques internationales, affaires étrangères et commerce international du Canada. Et Monsieur Angelo Mazzone, directeur de l'Institut culturel italien à Montréal. Alors, thank you all you for being here, and let's get started.
Thank you very much, Francesca, and thank you all for being here. Bienvenue à Lucie Miguel. Bienvenuti. We're going to, the conference that we're going to, the panel we're going to talk about today really starts with an understanding of what actually is in the field now. I've just put up a quick slide on learning from best practices. And here we want to talk about researchers. We want to talk about student exchanges. There have been questions raised about joint degree programs and student mobility in general. And there's also a very strong interest on the part of both Canadian and Italian governments to talk about private sector or public sector, private sector science and technology research partnerships. But we're not only here to talk about science. There are many people in the audience who come from the social sciences or the humanities who have an interest in exchanges with Italy. And while the community is the scientific community, they have a broad mandate that covers all kinds of exchanges between Italy and Canada, and we want to mobilize some of those resources as well. So I just wanted to give you a quick overview of some of the things that we should be talking about. I'm going to ask as we go through the table, when we're talking about a topic, if we can give some current examples of what's going on, if we can understand the costs and benefits of those kinds of relationships, understand if we can make some incremental improvements to those working relationships, or think more radically about transforming them into something else, and then not leave here today without having some takeaways and work for all of us to do who want to see greater collaboration between Canada and Italy really take place. So it's a focused kind of a panel. We have five people who will talk and answer questions. We know there'll be interaction with the audience. I just urge you to make sure when you speak into a microphone. The SIC has asked that we record this event so that they can place it on their website, and we can have people who aren't here will benefit from the answers that are given. Of course, we haven't signed release forms yet, but I think we'll be in relatively good shape on that front. So again, it's trying to figure out examples of what's going on, how we can improve them, what the benefits are, what transformations we can undertake, and then how do we walk away or come away from here knowing that there's a next step for us in ensuring this kind of a relationship. I'm going to just start by saying I've just come back in February from a meeting at CRUI, which is the Italian University Rectors Association, in which five Canadian universities made presentations. And one of the things that struck me was that we were not particularly well prepared as Canadians to interact with the Italian university system. And it's important to remember that we have lots of individual collaborations, but on an institutional level, the bilateral agreements are not particularly well formed. The exchange of students and their mobility is not attended to appropriately. And we don't really understand what mechanisms we could use on both sides to foster greater collaboration, to have access to the kind of funding that's necessary to bring this to bring these collaborations to fruition, and to have students and researchers have a positive experience. So we're looking at researchers, we'll look at student exchanges, we look at the notion of the relationships among universities, and then on science and technology partnerships that can emerge. So these are the things that the panel is going to focus on. I'm going to just pose a series of questions to the panel and have them answer it as they please and in whatever order they feel appropriate. And then if there's something you need clarified from the audience, don't hesitate to raise your hand. Otherwise, we'll come back to after the question period to an open discussion in which members of the audience can pose more specific questions to the members of the panel. So the first simplest question we can ask is, what are some of the examples that we already have of collaboration between Italy and Canada? So I'm just going to ask Emanuele to start off and then work our way down. Some specific examples of the kinds of exchanges that are taking place in any one of these areas. Emanuele?
Yes. Can I show this as well? Good afternoon, everybody. It's my pleasure today to introduce a very short presentation, because I think today is the time not to for the presentation, the time for a lot of questions. I even tell you a role. I represent all Italian science community in Canada, but I think who represents the Italian scientists in Canada, everybody represented their, what's their role in the Italian scientists in Canada. Anyway, I am, and a special thanks to Tony Masi, Francesca Mangiarini to organize this very opportunity, because my role is to improve the dialogue between the two important sciences. Anyway, Antonio is he's my best friend, but it's a strong question. But anyway, I have a good news for everybody. I have prepared a very short overview, but for the Italian and Canadian thematic year to represent, say, maybe around four or five, say, aerospace, agri-food, green technology, health and life, and nanotechnology exist. Maybe I was coming in Canada around 4 years ago in 2007. Now exist 3,000 researchers all around Canada and the three important associations. Maybe 1 week ago is born another one, say in British Columbia, but the first, say in Quebec. And the Italian association in Canada, in Quebec, in Ontario, in British Columbia is, for me, the really contact point with the Canadian universities, because it's not easy to spoke with all together, but I show must go on, because I have a really concrete example. Exists around 116 bilateral agreement, but I think the bilateral agreement is only paper. I know what to say, Anthony Masi, to say if you are the really example. This is a concrete example, because my strategy when I'm professor in Naples, I say, don't thinking only bilateral cooperation. Italy is a member of the European Commission, and the big founder is the same framework program, but I don't know why, this is another question, why the Canadian research doesn't know this is a big opportunity to entry in a European network. And this is the concrete example, because I remember when I have a special, I meet in 2009 and with Carol Morneau, because I have a close agreement with the Italian National Research Council in Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. And after the paper, I say the same your question. And now what's the next step? The next step is to create a project, bilateral project, and the people say, but I don't know why, and now is a good news, because of the bilateral, this is a project to finance with the European Commission, is a really concrete. The coordinator, I'm very happy, is my friend, so he say is Clara Silvestre, and Carol, she know her, she say in Napoli, and this is a really concrete example to use the bilateral connection to help to and to use the multilateral funding, the same of European. This is another really concrete example, is Era Khan, the director, say, Garth William, but who is the coordinator of the web portal, say, Access to Canada, say, l'Agenzia APRE, l'Agenzia per la Ricerca Europea, and she is the Assina Di Maggio, and she's Italian. This is another concrete example. I have with the next concrete follow-up, the next concrete follow-up, say, in a big important meeting in October in Ottawa, and with the title Cooperation Between Canadian and Italian University and Research Center with the Knowledge in Motion. But I have spoken a lot of time with Anthony Madi, say, Emanuele, please, the follow-up is not only to explain exactly what's the Italian university have a bilateral agreement, but exactly the another strategy, say, what's your instruments to close the project, bilateral project. This is the reason why I have created in the afternoon three important sessions, parallel session in ICT, and I invite all together to participate in the afternoon, 11 October in Ottawa, in ICT, Food for Health, and Green Technology, because it's a big occasion to meet the Italian colleague, to meet Garth William, to meet who financing the defeat, or who financing the scientific project. And Italy and Canada is a very complete, is a very natural partner because it's very easy to work in Canada and the Italian work in Canada. But it's in good news because the Italian Minister of Science in the end of March have introduced an NPR, is the Piano Nazionale per la Ricerca, and the Ministry and the Ministry of Economy have an investment, have dedicated a funding, €1.7 million for 14 Progetti Bandiera, say, flag project. And maybe I don't have a translate in Italian, but it's a lot of thematic area. It's very close of the Canadian researchers. But the role of the Italian embassy is a concrete role in a facilitator. And I think it is very important to create a very joint venture or action dedicated to technology transfer. I have here to represent the best electronic. This is a really concrete example. After the bilateral agreement, it's born in a project, and the company in the best electronic created a special synchrotron to live in Canada for the tester. But anyway, this is my very short. I'm so sorry I speak quickly and terrible English, but I don't know exactly what's my language in now. It's French, English, or Italian. But I think now is the time for question. I'm here, and don't hesitate. Take your hand and up your finger, and I hope to help you. Thank you.
Buongiorno. If you feel that your English accent is not as great, you can hear mine. Actually, I'm...
You know why? I pay a lot of a coffee in Canada, yes.
Yeah, we do get along together, actually. Talking about partnerships between, Quebecers and Italians, we're a good example of it, actually. We were sitting on a commission last November, actually, to discuss joint collaboration together, and we have been... Let's see, the Quebec government has put up a new research and innovation strategy. We want to have more research recognized internationally. We know we can't do it alone, and McGill is a good example of this, actually, and our Italian partners are really great collaborators on many, many issues, actually. Up so far, I mean, when we look at the first funding that were given for the, let's say, first Quebec Research and Innovation Strategy starting in 2007, up to now, we've been investing about $1.7 million in bilateral collaborations. And if we're talking about, large-scale projects, we can add it to up to $3.5 million. And just for the Quebec money that were invested for Quebec researchers, so you have the Italian counterparts as well that will add to it. And if we had even more and more partners, because I think we're talking about a chain of innovation, but we are also a chain of partners. So while having, agreements between Quebec and Italy, we're able to attract other partners together as well. So if we talk about the FP7 framework, and my colleagues, will talk about it, we're having a lot of friends. I mean, we can bring a lot of friends together, actually. I'm talking about Denmark, Norwegian people, and people from the USA as well. So we have a lot of different projects, and in many, many fields, actually, we are working together, because I have a list of, as I mentioned, about 27 projects. Because I had a fire alarm before coming here at work, so I just didn't have time to grab my... So I just put all my papers, because my summary was left on my table when I left, so I'm just a bit disorganized at the moment. But I have a lot of brilliant examples, actually, of collaborative works being done with Quebec universities, with Italian universities as well. They do involve the industry, the industrial partners on some of the projects that we have there. We're talking about the aerospace fields. We're talking about climatic changes. We have, even in social innovation, we might have some projects. We don't have many of them, but it's starting, and I think there's a lot that we can do, on this subject as well. so and optic photonics. I mean, genomics. I can name all the, you know, where Quebec has strengths. We can meet partners in Italy with the same interests, actually. And if we can talk about large-scale projects, but it starts with attracting students, attracting researchers, attracting industries to come here to open research centers, and because we know we can't survive without research and innovation if we want to be able to develop on the economic side, actually. So there are a lot of different measures already in place, and I think there's a lot of goodwill from both parts, and that we can do. We are doing a lot together, and we can still do more, I believe. So, and I'll stop there because I know we have three people that you might want to hear.
Grazie. Merci. Thank you. First of all, thank you to the Italian scientific community for inviting us here, and of course to McGill University for organizing this. I really appreciate the kind of informal format and the opportunity to answer questions and speak with you today. So I hope we'll have a chance to get into that. And of course, Dr. Massey has posed the most difficult question actually right off the top. Let's get to concrete examples. Yeah. I'd like to get into that. And certainly, Emmanuel mentioned the example of the Arakan project, which is, as Francesca mentioned, a joint project of the European Commission and the Government of Canada, and it includes Canadian partners and European partners, notably an Italian partner, APRE, the Agency for the Promotion of Research in Europe, which is based in Rome, as Emmanuel mentioned. And so I'm very happy to be an example of this sort of collaboration. And as Francesca mentioned, the goal of our project is really to raise awareness among Canadians about opportunities for collaborating with the European colleagues in the 7th Framework Program. I think there's also a need, to be honest, to raise some awareness among Europeans that Canadians are also eligible to participate in 7th Program projects. And you are very well placed, I think, to play a role in that. So I should just mention a little bit about the background, because Emmanuel mentioned about the importance of the 7th Framework Program in European research, and I'd just like to speak quickly about that before moving on to some examples, because in fact the research community, particularly here at McGill, is, I think, to some degree very aware of the opportunities here, and it's a bit of a leading example in Canada. But the seventh Framework Program is the major funding program in Europe for research and development, from fundamental research right up to the point of commercialization. And it is different from a Canadian approach in that it covers all different sectors and funds thematically for the most part. So it's very multi-sectoral, multidisciplinary in the types of research projects that it supports. And of course, it also, in FP7, this version of it, it allows international participation throughout any of the different projects. For countries like Canada, we participate on the same basis that Italians or other Europeans participate in Canadian projects. That is, we need to bring our own funding to the table to participate. So the significance of participation, though, is one, this is a huge international project. I'm talking about funding at 54 billion euros over 7 years, which is enormous. It's become a plaque d'honneur for international research. And it allows Canadians, by participating in these projects, to work with the best minds, essentially, in the world, and to be at the table, and to have their research reverberate internationally. I think that's really where the greatest appeal is for the project. At a more detailed for participation in framework program projects. At a more detailed level, you can look at it. There's a financial aspect to this, obviously. An investment in Canadian research can be used to participate in a larger project doing similar work as yourself, and then you're leveraging your own funds. In the field of information and communications technologies, I was looking just yesterday actually at some of the figures where there are currently, it's just 13 projects that involve Canadians. The total investment into those projects is 105 million euros, but the Canadian investment is the equivalent of 5 million euros. So we're leveraging our own existing funds at about 20 to 1, which is not so bad. There's also opportunities within the framework program for mobility, which I think could be particularly interesting for researchers that have already good ties in Italy and in Europe generally. Because these opportunities, and there is some written material around. I'm looking for Kathy, who has at the back, who has some examples for when you leave. But the framework program has a number of particular grants that encourage the mobility of researchers from Europe coming to Canada, and also for Canadians going back to Europe. If McGill, for example, is the host of a European researcher coming here. McGill is like an associate partner in this project, so you don't have to sign any legal agreements. I know the provost will be very happy to know to get around it. But what happens is these are for postdoctoral fellows and university professors. Their travel is paid, accommodation, their salary is paid, yeah. And they can also, their institution can provide McGill with some compensation for lab costs. So you have a very talented, wonderful researcher working here at very little cost. Alternatively, for Canadians here, you can have the same benefits going to a host organization, for example, in Italy. So very, very advantageous that way. And I should add that in some very, so I'm sort of moving on to another little topic here, but another particular advantage is participation in some of the bigger research projects. For the most part, the Canadians are expected to bring their own funding. But on those rare occasions where Canadians can show that their contribution to the project is essential for the success of that project, and that there's nobody in Europe who can do that, they can receive some funding. And we are seeing that to a certain degree, particularly, interestingly enough, in the health field. So there's a few ways where I think we can be a little bit more creative about thinking about how to use these projects. And I'm happy to say, because I'm trying to get to your examples, I'm happy to say that there are examples, particularly here at McGill. I actually was going through the stats, of course, trying to prepare for today's presentation, and found four different projects, FP7 projects, that involve McGill researchers and Italian research organizations. One of them, just to give you a specific example, is called Sustaining Research Momentum Over the Coming Decades, Mentoring the Next Generation of Researchers for Tuberculosis. The researcher here who is engaged is Dr. Madhukar Pai. I don't know if he would be in the room, but this project is essentially training young postdoctoral fellows and young researchers, particularly in developing countries, and providing them with mentorship and training. The partner in Europe is the Università degli Studi di Sassari. Please don't shoot me for the pronunciation, but it's a good example. And actually, next month, Arakan, our project, is organizing an information session, a little bit similar to this one, at the Congress of the Social Sciences and Humanities. I know Dr. Massey mentioned there's some social scientists in the room. So we're organizing an information session there and are going to be very proud to feature the research of the Gusto project, which involves Dr. Axel Vandenberg from McGill, and also Italian partners. And the project is looking at economic instability in Europe So a fairly topical subject, and how this can best be addressed through different policy functions. So there are certainly some examples and some tools that I think can be used, and I hope that myself, and I'll point to Melody Caldang, who has just joined the ARACAN project in the audience, I hope that we can be a resource for people at McGill and, of course, other, we won't name other universities in the area, but certainly other researchers as well, of course. So, thank you.
We're very ecumenical here. You can see other universities anywhere in the country.
Yes, thank you to the association and McGill for having us here. I am Garth Williams' counterpart on the federal government side. I'm a trade commissioner from the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade. And about 100 years ago, I graduated from McGill. So, and I'm not a researcher, I'm not a scientist, but I did get a degree in economics. So, but I've been a trade commissioner for the past 24 years at the department. Been very lucky to do that, and I just before I talk a little bit about my role with the ARACAN, because basically I supply Garth the money, but I will talk a little bit about our network.
So better than it is.
I'll talk a little bit about our network because that's important for everyone to know. Because my specialty is international business development. We are the counterpart to Professor Fiore, who's here from Italy. We are abroad. We also have a network in every province. And the department, in its wisdom, decided about 10 years ago we would do more than trade. We would do investment, foreign direct investment. We would do Canadian direct investment abroad, and we would do science and technology and innovation. So all of a sudden, overnight, our jobs changed. We were no longer just doing trade, money passes hands, and dealing with companies. We were dealing with a lot more than that, and it's still coming around. People still don't quite understand the technology exchange and how we do innovation abroad, and it's a challenge. And another part of that challenge, of course, is the awareness that we actually do that. Who do I call? How do you know? The client is different. The client for is researchers, which are not, you know, profit-making money yet. Yet. So that's why it is a bit of an awareness challenge. And, of course, the funding challenge. I'm not sure you're going to ask that question a little later, but we have that kind of a challenge. So we're represented and at 150 countries abroad. We have a brochure in the back about one of our programs, and that's mentioned about the Trade Commissioner Service. So we do more than trade. We have about 90 science and technology officers abroad, and they are responsible for working with folks like you out in the territories that they're in to help establish collaborations, technology partnerships. We support a lot of the functions that help bring you together, you know, bring you out of the lab and into a networking type of environment. And in fact, that's the ARACAN program. I think I'll hold off on the funding, but with the ARACAN, we support all of these networking opportunities, and we sort of piggyback on trade shows and conferences so that we go where the researchers are to tell them about the program and how to access the FP7 program, because it's not an easy thing to understand. The EU is a great big beast, and it's kind of hard to understand, even I think even when you're there, how it all works. So our network is there to help with that. But the ARACAN, for some concrete examples, we paid for the travel for some people to come to the future of the Internet. Constantino La Rosa from Pisa, she came. And we also paid, I think you mentioned, Katia and Sonia from APRE. She came to share her experience with us in Ottawa for our sector experts. I think we've also supported a professor from this university to go to Brussels. It wasn't an Italian so much as an EU function, but on health research. Paul Asko, he went for a roundtable on health research. And we also had a small and medium-sized company conference here. where we had Marco Gorini from Benito in Innovation, the Italian version of Innovation, to come here. So we do this kind of support by paying for their travel because it's a lot of money. And we also support holding the functions at the conference because that's a lot of money. So I'll hold back on some of the money things if you want me to.
So that's
going to
be one of the more interesting.
Yeah. thank you very much, Professor. I'm very pleased to be here with Miguel because it's one of the biggest faculties of agriculture that we have under your roof. It's also very important to work all together, and this is an example of how we can put this national effort to help develop collaboration with Europe. I represent Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, and I'm also the national contact point for food, agriculture, fisheries, and biotechnology at the Southern Framework Program, or for the Southern Framework Program. So my mandate under the NCP role is to disseminate the information on the programs, but also on the possibility to do cooperation with all the countries in Europe. But I don't know why, but with Italy, it's been easier over the last years because we have a lot of friends. And friends bring other friends. And these friends bring other friends. And friends, you know what? They're reliable. So this is how you can do very good business. But also because Italians see Canadian scientists as good people to work with. So it opens a lot of opportunities. On the initiatives, we've been working with the European Commission on a specific project called BioCircle, which is a network of network that has the mandate of bringing the partners together. Over the last 2 years, we held two brokerage events under this project and a number of other information sessions, but dedicated to food, agriculture, fisheries, and biotechnologies. So this has brought a lot of activities, and we had to channel them. So we've went from workshop to face-to-face visit, etc. And some on out of these activities, some projects were put together. One example I have, very, very concrete, is a scientist that we brought for working visit in Brussels. This scientist participated to an info day and a brokerage event where she met colleagues that were working on the same field. Actually, it's food nanotechnology, so that tells you a little bit where it is. It's in it's in the home of Emmanuel, but that not because it came from Emmanuel, but because they were good scientists. And they met there for the first time, and then they met another network, and finally, they are working together under an FP7 program. So what it brings back to Canada, because when we talk about the 7th framework program, you see all these zeros and thousands of euros and we don't have this, you know, we don't have this kind of program. But if you realize that there's 27 countries and you split between each scientist, it's not that much. So it's very competitive. To do so, they pool with Europeans and other countries' expertise. And on some topics, we were able to influence the work plan. So you would then see on certain topic, you know, collaboration with Canada would be, and USA will be welcome. That means that if the European scientist works with a Canadian, it will or present a project with a Canadian partner, it will have more chances to succeed because it's been embedded in the project. So this was a way to make things advance a little bit through DG research on food agriculture. And we also got involved into what we call twinning activities, which is basically
internationalizing some of the Canadian initiatives. The good news is that it's been announced lately that a new program will soon come out which is dedicated to the universities. And if a scientist has an insert grant, he will be able to access to this additional program where there's money to internationalize their activities in Europe. So you start at the European Commission, which is very, very, very large, and you end up doing bilateral, but on the European scene, you work with an Italian counterpart, but this Italian counterpart is linked to other networks or other big projects. So it's a very good way to leverage research. So this is some of the example. First, I wanted to share with you. There's others. There's example on mobility. Agriculture Canada has 19 labs across the country. We open our door to Italians who are willing to come and work with our scientists. Sometimes we have specific requests on scientists seeking for another partner or seeking a PhD student on that field. So that information we can distribute and make the wheel turn.
Thank you very much for the first round of questions, but you've opened up the door to the interesting question that Maria raised earlier, which is access to funding and the ways in which Canadians can tap into sources here and leverage their research expenditures and their research activities in the European Union and specifically in Italy through these programs.
Correct.
So you've given us a very good example of a program that is soon to be announced that specifically, I guess, at NSERC, but also in the other, to access money for European collaborations. And that's one way in which research professors at universities and principal investigators can tap into and leverage their money. I think, Maria, you said you were going to open up some discussion.
I'm afraid of that.
Yeah.
Thank you. But we don't have money on foreign affairs to actually do research because that's not the kind of department we are. We're not a science-based department. We have other types of funding. And my colleague, Yolanda, here, she has a different take on funding. But I just want to say, I've already spoken on the ARICAN, the way they support collaboration. We also, where I sit in the innovation division, we have two other programs, one called Going Global in Innovation, and another one is the Science and Technology Partnership. But the issue with the Science and Technology Partnership, which is also not funding true research, it supports a collaboration and it does pay for some other things, but it only takes care of four countries because these are our priority countries and it's the Italy eye is not there. The India is there, Israel, China, and Brazil. That's for the ISTPP program. And there's more information on that. When you pick up the brochure, you'll be able to access the website to find out more on that one. Going Global is also a program we have. It appears that I was looking at some of the statistics for the applications for Italy, and we didn't have very many. We only had two. So I asked myself, not being in the division a long time, why is that? The criteria of the program is such that it supports a collaboration effort if you're close to finalizing it. It's not a fishing expedition. You can't go to a trade show. You have to already have a relationship. The Canadian has a relationship with either a company or research or technology partnership in Italy, for example. And then we support travel. So it's not research money, and it's a very successful program. But I still not quite sure why there's not a lot of Italian participation.
Just to emphasize that can facilitate the exchange.
Absolutely.
So it's not just about having money to do research,
yes,
but having access to funds to allow collaboration to take place. So it's important.
Absolutely.
I tried to cover off some of the what I think are the better funding opportunities within the framework program. it's particularly, I think, within the mobility types of programs. I spoke earlier about what they call the international outgoing and international incoming fellowships. And I should emphasize those are fellowships for postdoc and also professors. We're not talking student fellowships here. Related to that and other types of funding tools within the framework program that can be beneficial, particularly where you have a research community such as we do here that has ties over in Europe. The Europeans fund something that they call an initial training grant program, which can also be very interesting. Essentially, what it funds is a group of institutions, universities, that are putting together a program of training for postdoctoral fellows. The funding will, of course, go just to the European institutions. But if McGill, for example, was part of the network, McGill could then host some of the training events and activities here, organizing training workshops, offering courses. And those would then be funded from the Italian universities, would pay McGill to do that. Of course, they would also pay for those postdoctoral fellows to come to participate in those training workshops. And they can be open for Canadian postdocs and professors to participate and graduate students. So it's not direct funding for Canadian researchers, but you can see the value of being part of such a network. And of course, the value is there on the European side too. They are clearly anxious to tap into the expertise that exists here. And this is the type of exchange that can happen. So it's sort of thinking of that way that I think allows this to be really beneficial. Another program that is not so much training related, as the idea is to support international research staff exchanges, where projects exist already, collaborations already exist, and there's a need for supporting. We'd like a researcher from McGill to spend 3 months in Rome, let's say. Perhaps somebody in Rome to spend, you know, six months in Montreal, to move people back and forth. What they're interested in through this program is funding a concerted effort, but supporting just the mobility side of it. And again, they can do that. So the Canadian participation again is not funded there. McGill would have to pay for its own researchers to be going abroad. But when you're receiving researchers, of course, they're strengthening your network internationally as well, and makes it interesting from that point of view. So it's just two examples.
Actually, I mean, we within the Quebec Research and Innovation Strategy, we have a program, and I'm sure some of you must have applied to that program or maybe are doing it at the moment, because it's called, the acronym is French, it's called the PSIRI, but it's a research assistance program for international research and innovation. And what we want to do actually is to build, to increase the number of high-level international research and innovation partnerships in strategic and priority areas for Quebec, actually. So we are funding Quebec researchers, but that's helping them to be able to build partnerships and, you know, to develop projects. And it's a quite, let's say, flexible program, I believe. I mean, from my counterparts from the federal government, we are the only one in Quebec. We are the only one having this kind of program, so we're quite, let's say, in French we say victime de notre succès. So we have about two calls for proposals for major bilateral research projects, and that can develop into multilateral research projects, large scale research projects within the 7th framework program. But at the moment, it's about 20-30% success rate. So it's quite good, and it's within the range that you're going to find in the funding agencies as well. We can have researchers coming from universities, colleges, but also from the business sector, actually. So we're trying to work more with the SMEs, but we have a different kind of industrial partners. And even the industry can apply themselves, but also they can be partners with researchers from the university. So we have different examples of nice partnerships that, and we've been able to develop different different projects. Because before I didn't mention, but we have, I said we have researchers from McGill, but also we have Dr. Chariot, who has developed the Pan Lab project. And because we're going to have in June the, how to say that? In Italy, they like Gilles Villeneuve, but the race, actually, the car race. Actually, you have all, a communication system developed that if a driver has a car accident, then he can move to the hospital. Well, it was, let's say, we like to say that it started with a project being funded with the city here, because we're starting the relationship, we're helping people to, let's say, call it the prelude à l'amour, or you just want to go and meet your partners and we can fund you. You want to develop more and more, then, as I said, up to, it can go, let's say, from $5,000 to help you to build your partnership up to $500,000 a year for 3 years to be able to enter the seventh framework program. So it's, as I said, it's quite flexible, and it can gives you the leverage to be able to make friends, let's say. And we're covering, different things. We have all the information out on our website, actually. So if you go on the, we have a new website at the Ministry of Economic Development. It's not that user-friendly for researchers because, we were complaining about that because our clientele actually are made of 80% of businesses. But we said, don't forget our researchers from the university. But at times, if you find information, you type funding programs, research and innovation, then you will end up on this kind of program, actually. And so we're funding salary expenditures, consultancy fees, travel and accommodation expenses, expenses related to intellectual property or the acquisition of international patents. We have different geographic priorities. We work a lot, as I mentioned before, with Italian partners. Again, because we have governmental agreements between Quebec and Italy, but also, again, because we have great people in Italy and here as well, and who are willing to work together. Our priority areas, I like to say, it's excellent. If you have something excellent, then, we have an evaluation process with experts that will look at your projects, and if this is a good project, then it can it can be in the race, let's say, to get the funding available. What else would I say? I mean, we're quite good. We've been assessing our programs, and we've had about close to 90% of satisfaction from our clientele, saying it's working fine. There are often a lot of papers to fill in, but it's useful papers to be able to get your project assessed and to be able to make it, let's say, work and to be able to underline what's good in it. So that's the funding opportunity.
Yes. Only a simple question is a special thanks of a general consulate of in Montreal, because I have a lot of work for the bilateral agreement in Quebec, but who are signatory the bilateral agreement is here is Giulio Picheca, is the general consulate. But anyway, for a really concrete example, the Italian Ministry of Foreign Affairs is only to complete your very clean explanation about the bilateral agreement, is the Italian Ministry of Foreign Affairs have financed six project for the project de grande rilevance, project di grande rilevanza, and this is a really concrete example, and I know it's a critical time for the economy in all around the world, but the Italian Ministry of Foreign Affairs have dedicated around 35,000 euro for project per year. Isn't it good news?
Not just a question of money. Money counts, but you need the money to get around a little bit, to get started. But you will gain so much by accessing to this network in Europe, because it's cutting edge research, and you want to play with the best mind. So all the opportunities are good. We are dedicated to bringing people together. So I hope you will take this opportunity, because the Italians have been very successful under the FP7 program, because they know the program, they know how it works, they know all the whereabouts, And if you have an Italian partner who's willing to put his energy with your project, just go and you eventually it will faire boule de neige.
Snowball.
Yeah, go ahead.
If I can just pick up on Carol's comments, because I mean, I really think it is. It's about trying to work in the best and most interesting research environment possible, and have that those international connections. The framework program itself that I've been talking about, of course, it fits within a political context that's about building Europe, and it's been going on for many years, of course, half a century. And so it has developed some of these tools to facilitate the movement of people and ideas and networking. And in a sense, now what we're hearing more from the Commission is, you know, they'd like to use these tools abroad, internationally, to engage the international research community. So there's a few, like, just specific things that are good for finding information that I can talk about. There's a website called the CORDIS website. It stands for Community of Research Information. Community of Research Development and Information System, but CORDIS. And on there, it's a pretty easy way to find funded projects within the framework program, and to find them in quite specific thematic areas, which is a good way to find out who's doing what in your field there. I know it's not, you know, most researchers have their own connections and their own networks from conferences and other things, but this is one way of doing it. They also have developed an electronic partner search tool. Ken always referring to examples where occasionally somebody's looking for specific expertise or specific knowledge. Canadians can access that and put in their own profiles and be sort of found that way. But of course, you can find others that way as well. Perhaps another little way to develop the network is to volunteer for peer review work within the framework program. Because it's so competitive, as Carol's mentioned, and these are such big projects within any particular field, the Commission is often looking for peer reviewers from outside of Europe who are qualified. Of course, the advantage of doing that, the same as working on peer review at CIHR or NSERC or others, you get to know the research in the area and who's doing what and develop your network there. Another tool that was developed, and Carol alluded to her role as the national contact point in Canada for the food, agriculture, and biotechnology theme within the framework program. One thing that you can know is that the Commission created in each European country a person who is the contact point within a particular research community, and their job is to disseminate information about calls for proposals and to assist their researchers in working through participation in the framework program projects. The unofficial role is to make sure that their researchers are in winning projects. So they're constantly in touch with their colleagues within a network to try and put these winning consortium together. But they're great access points then for us to find out information about, again, consortium that are coming together. I would just say in Italy, it's very true that Italians are very good at doing this, and you have some good advantages. Carol mentioned Katia Insagna, who's based at APRE in Rome, and she is the head of the mobility network of these national contact points. So the person who is trying to coordinate the various mobility opportunities that are raised by contact points in each of the 27 European countries and more. So again, can facilitate those connections. It's really about building on the networks that you have and using some of these tools.
It's better than the Marriage Bureau, right?
They try to be.
We hope they are. I think what we've learned a little bit today, right now in this conversation, which has gone on to several different topics, are of course that what we do now is already based on individual collaboration between researchers. We know that, and we know how to do it, but we're not always doing it well. There are hit and miss propositions in the way in which individual researchers access each other or access funding opportunities. And I think we've heard a couple of really good examples of ways in which we can leverage off of those individual research opportunities by looking for points of contact, using the internet tools and the websites that are available for searching for some of them, by thinking about when we make applications as individual researchers and principal investigators, remembering that there are opportunities for research mobility to take place with scholars and other researchers in Italy. And we can provide some support institutionally for having those things happen. I think that we're not quite at the point of being able to say that we can transform that set of relationships unless we make them institutional priorities. So, I mean, it's a challenge to the universities to take up and to understand that these kinds of international exchanges should not be left to individual hit and miss opportunities, but rather should reflect institutional priorities. And the institutional priorities create, I think Carol said it best, networks of networks, in which then the access to individuals, for individuals to gain funding, becomes available. But everyone at the table today has given us opportunity to think about collaboration, about cooperation on economic development and innovation, about specific exchanges with the European Union, a sectoral example, and for the Department of Foreign Trade, et cetera. So we've got the five panelists have given us opportunities to think through the issues for individual researchers and how they build up into collaborations. And once this is posted on the six website, I'm sure we'll be able to gain access as well to the actual links for the things that were talked about today. So I think on the level of the individual researchers, we've gone pretty far. I'm going to stop here for a minute and see if there are any questions from the audience about these specific interventions we've just heard. Yes. Do you want to introduce yourself for everyone?
Yes. Yeah, it's on. Okay, so my name is Stefano Stefani. I'm a professor here at McGill in the Faculty of Medicine. As my name and accent probably indicates, I'm from Italy originally. I actually have three questions, so I'm going to start with one and then wait for other people. If nobody wants, I'll ask more. For Garth. So what you said is very clear. However, I want to understand exactly how ideally the process could work or has worked. I understand very well, and I agree with Tony, that so far everything, most has been occurring at level of individuals. So I collaborate, I have colleagues I trust, and we decide to try and search for money. Before, Europe was taboo for us, now apparently it's not. So I need to have, of course, a network, a group of colleagues based in Europe, correct? I need to have, from what you said, I think I understood, I need to have matching funds. Is that correct?
You have to be able to fund your, for the most part, you need to be able to fund your own participation.
Right. So if I was going in by myself, that would be my own grants. Let's say my CIHR grants. That would be placed as collateral. Right?
Correct.
If I was going in as part of an institution, like Tony was saying, then maybe that would be institutional money, which would be actually much better because, you know, one of the reasons why we look for more money is probably because we don't have enough money to start with, right? Especially with the way funding is going. So that would have to be a matching fund, is that correct? Right. And then the money would stay in Europe, am I right? The money wouldn't come here if we were funded. So basically it would have to be up to us, the members of the group, to work out an arrangement where some of the money trickles in here, correct? Or am I wrong?
For the most part here, I think what if you and there's different types of funding within the framework program. So what you're describing is most accurate for what they call their cooperation projects, which are the large thematic
right.
research funding projects.
So operating funds.
Yeah,
fundamental.
Yeah,
okay.
And they And absolutely, I think you put your finger on the fact that the big advantage is to be in a network already, to have colleagues that you know and trust and can work with. I mentioned off the top a little bit that sometimes Europeans don't know that you're eligible to join the project. That's something that you can bring to their attention, regardless of if they decide to go forward with the project, for sure the coordinator of the project needs to be a European. And that's critical. And it's very beneficial for us because it means that they're the ones who are managing much of the paperwork and all of the organization of it, right? And they can guide you through the parts that you need to contribute in making the application. Yeah. Mostly the European funds are going to be used for themselves, for their own research. There should be some funds in the project, though, for having meetings. Some travel would be expected. That sort of fund can come through the project where you would be able to benefit from the European university from your colleague. You mentioned you would be using your own funds from CIHR. I think that's right. I understand that you might be able to pursue funding from the ministry in Quebec in this case. Mm-hmm. And because you mentioned health, I don't like to talk really about the framework program as a funding program for Canadians because it's not. But it in the health field in particular, for some reason, there's 20 projects that have Canadians in them now, and 16 of those projects, the Canadians are getting some money, at least a portion of it. So they're making the case, and you have to tell the coordinator when they submit, make the argument that this project will fail without me, basically, right? And then see what happens from that point of view. I mentioned, though, following from that, other types of programs, like those mobility programs, where the situation is different, and maybe just a different way to develop your collaboration, and you can then receive some of that funding if you're going to spend some time in Italy for a while.
Thank you. Other questions? Yes, David.
thank you, David Lametti from the Faculty of Law. Our faculty has a number of extensive contacts in Italy. I think it's fair to say we're the most well-known law faculty in Italy. We have bilateral exchanges. We have some on the way. I have two colleagues beside me who are here from Italy for the year. A third, who is probably Italy's best young food law expert, is going to be with us for almost a year and a half on a Marie Curie fellowship, as well as a postdoc in our law faculty. Realistically, how much of this might be available to us? We already have a number of things on the go. Most of the examples you've given me, with the exception of food law and agriculture, where there's an easy in, how much of this realistically could conceivably come to a law faculty or a law programs?
You're talking about the FP7 funding? I think
or anyone at the table. I'm just curious.
Hi, I'm Laura DeMine of the Department of Foreign Affairs and International Trade, and basically I work in the International Education and Youth Division. So basically what we do is we oversee academic programs and try to internationalize them. Within our programs, we also spearhead certain scholarships for other government departments. And we also have our own program, which is called the Understanding Canada Program. And basically, the roster of scholarships are both for scientific researchers as well as humanities, social sciences, law, and other faculties as well. One of our programs, and I'm actually the senior program manager for Europe, is the Understanding Canada Program. The program, as Mr. Williams also mentioned, is that often the grants which are awarded to the foreign partner. But the purpose of foreign affairs, again, is to foster international linkages and institutional linkages between Canada and countries abroad. So basically, you would have to, if you have your partners, like you were mentioning, it would serve you when you had your partners in Italy in taking advantage, for example, of our student mobility program. The beauty of it is that it's carte blanche. And we usually, we let you to design the program as you wish, to simplify the mobility exchange between Canada and Europe. So, for example, if you would like to have other academics come to teach or to come and do research here in Canada, it's something which would be available. To have them come on a study tour to McGill is another option. So you can basically modify it as you wish, provided it's a good quality program. It's extremely competitive. It's a worldwide competitive program, but it's open to both Canadians and foreign partners. But again, it's a foreign partner that has to apply. Now, for the faculty, for your example, if let's say you'd like to organize a reciprocal exchange, you could also apply under the program. So you would have, for example, like four law faculty students from the University of McGill going to Italy, to Rome, and the same thing coming back. That would foster institutional collaboration. You could also work on a joint research project. You can use it in so many multifaceted ways. So again, this is the Understanding Canada program. You can check it up on our website. I also prepared a presentation if we'd like to discuss it. And I could also show you the different websites which exist, which you can actually filter through by country and by your thematic interest, and basically come down to a list which actually meets your criteria and then apply for it. And then I'd also be available if you had any other questions regarding our programs.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
My name is Filippo Sabetti, and I'm a political scientist here in the Faculty of Arts. I very, very much enjoyed all the presentations. I've learned a lot from them. But as a social scientist, I'm a bit concerned about the absence of history, humanities, and social science in the kind of research knowledge that you are promoting, which is all very laudable. So I'd like to ask, what opportunities exist for cooperation or research efforts or in social science and humanities, I think, which seem to be neglected, if you'll allow me to say that, or maybe not, at least to my knowledge. So I wonder if you can elaborate if there are opportunities that one can pursue in terms of cooperation, exchange, etc., and where one can find this kind of information. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the question, because it's really important. And of course, social science and humanities is Canada's largest research community, so it's very important certainly I know from the Government of Canada perspective. I can say that within the framework program from Europe, so I'm talking about the framework program specifically now, there are different thematic areas, 10 of them. One of them is the social sciences and humanities. So it's targeted where there's funds allotted specifically for projects in the social sciences and humanities. The project that I mentioned off the start involving your colleague Axel Vandenberg, a professor here at McGill, is in the social sciences and humanities. So it's not neglected. The funding levels aren't the same, I have to be honest, but this is somewhat similar to what we see in Canada with NSERC, CIHR, and CHIRC. To respond to the gentleman here as well, because it's also relevant, I was talking about the mobility programs within the framework program, or what they call the people program. There's no thematic or subject definition there. It's a bottom-up. So the idea is people apply. So the Marie Curie fellowships that you're already benefiting from or having people participate in, open to all disciplines. And overall, I mean, one of the advantages you can, when talking to your European colleagues, you can mention that I believe overall the success rate in the framework program, to get to the point about, you know, how realistic is this, the success rate in the framework program overall in Europe is around 20%, 20-22%. Projects with Canadians in them, the success rate's around 30%. So it's a little bit of an advantage for our European friends.
Other questions?
Something on this. Actually, our program is open for people from the social sciences. Actually, we just don't get that many applications. Out of 50, we had about 6 or 7, I think, during the last call for proposals. But we did manage some of them, actually. And I have one here, which is the acronym is ERSEC, between a researcher from McGill University and from someone from the University of Teramo. So we there, and it's a seven framework program. I mean, they did apply and they managed to get major funding. I think it's over $100,000. So we welcome those kind of.
If I may interrupt. This is a problem of knowledge. How does one know about these things?
I mean, the program.
Forgive my ignorance.
I'm looking at Francesca somewhere. I don't know where she is in the room. I mean, she knows. She has the yeah. Hello. So she has the link to give you the information. So that where you can get the information on our program. Francesca, maybe she.
Oh yes.
She. I know. She. There was a list of everybody in the room here. So maybe you can.
We will post it on the website, so you can go now on the website of the association and you will find all the information.
Yeah, so
if I may just add, thank you, Mr. Savetti, for your question, and I'm very pleased that you raised the question because it's a topic that comes up quite frequently, and we seem to have some form of fragmented approach between the it's research-intensive, and especially McGill's G13, and extremely research-intensive, and then we're seeing what's happening to the humanities and social sciences. So it's all the same kind of dialogue that's going on. There's an education that has to be done because there's a wealth of different programs which exist and which are spearheaded by the federal government, and it seems that we have no advocates which are going out there and disseminating this information to actual researchers which are really enthusiastic and interested in partaking in these projects. So basically, I don't know if it's possible, if we had access to the internet, if we could just maybe show you the link and how user-friendly this. We just turned it off. Okay. Basically, what you would do is go directly on our Department of Foreign Affairs International website. The link is www.scholarships.gc.ca. Okay? What we did is we compiled a database of all the different programs which are available through NSERC, through the health research, through the social sciences and humanities, research center, et cetera. And you can basically filter it by what you are, if you're a student, if you're a researcher, if you're Canadian or non-Canadian. And then you can also filter down by country, for example, you'd like to participate with another colleague, which is in France, for example. You can do so. You can filter it down by country as well, and then break it down further according to what you're looking for for your type of research and things like that. So again, all the information is available on one website, filtered down by database, and again, it regroups all the different scholarships and grant programs which are available through the federal government by the different granting agencies, the Tri-Council as well, and through the different other departments.
Thank you. Professor Resta.
Thank you. Giorgio Resta from the University of Bari here, and McGill is here. I have a question. I would like to know, I'm very curious. According to my experience, it is very easy for a young researcher from Italy to go abroad, to get scholarship, to get funding, and for example, the program Understanding Canada is very useful in Canada. To my experience, is one of the most generous countries in providing scholarship. How is the reverse situation? Because we have the problem that we export a lot of scientists that go and study abroad. Can we really manage to get scholars and young researchers to come to Italy? Do we have any Understanding Italy program or something that would probably be needed? That is my question. Because from my experience, it is difficult to get students, young students coming from abroad to study to Italy. It is easier to get a scientific collaboration at the level of professors and so on, but getting the young, that is the problem.
That's a very good question. I think I'll leave that the Italian experts answer it. I can speak from personal experience only because I have a nephew, an Italian nephew, who's studying for a PhD in nanoscience at Pisa, at La Normale. And in his laboratory, there are Romanians, Chinese, Brazilians. So in the science fields, they manage to bring international researchers for doing doctoral degrees in Italy and for postdoctoral fellowships as well. So I know that as a personal example. One other disclaimer is just that Axel Vandenberg and I have published papers together, so I just wanted to say that. As a social, I'm not a scientist either, I'm a social scientist, but we've had collaborations in Italy and Europe in the past.
Thanks a lot for my colleague in Bari. It's not embarrassing for me because I have good news for you. If you want, you have information about the Ministry of Foreign Affairs at the deadline in the 2nd May in 2011, but the Ministry of Foreign Affairs have a link, have a in a budget to pay a grant for 6 months or 10 months to live in for the Canadian researchers in Italy. And if you want, you can consult the website of www.ambottava.esteri.it, and if you put in the section cooperation, scientific cooperation, you have all information about the to participate, to propose your grant to the Canadian. Maybe the other good news, say if you want the to participate the every bilateral cooperation, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs pay and a grant or short mobility. If you compare, it's a total difference, but it's in the first step. For me, it's in the first step to give. Maybe every people spoke, you know, it's not money, but it's the money for the network. For me, it's money because it's not a lot. You are graduating lawyer. You are, you know, it's for me, it's the first step to create a big network for European colleague. It's money, and it's a good occasion to propose for the European Freedom Program.
Garth, did you want to add it? Maybe I can add just quickly. Yeah, I mentioned the project, the program earlier for initial training networks that exist within the framework program. I should have mentioned, I mean, that those networks will recruit students to come in and be part of those networks and getting training. So if you were able to refer to your colleagues in Europe, Canadian students, when they're forming one of those networks, that would be one way. And of course, they receive, you know, funding like others would coming here.
Yes. Isito.
Yes, for the Italian embassy, if you check on the Google, the Embassy of Italy in Canada, it's very easy. www.ambottava.esteri.it.
As Francesca pointed out, we're going to make sure that the association posts this on its website with all of the links that we can on a separate page, so that we'll make sure that you can have links to these to the sites that give information.
I just wanted to add that the three funding agencies in Quebec, I mean the FARIS, Fonds de Recherche en Santé, you know all of them, I'm sure, they do have some, not many, but some merit scholarships for foreign students to attract them. And also they also have support for international traineeship. So you might, but again, they don't have that many, but it is available for some students in specific fields, actually. So you can find the information on their website.
There are, just on a personal note, there are lots of Italian students studying at McGill right now. We've got about 75 or so Italian citizens who are studying mostly for PhDs, but also for Huitera's postdocs. About 20 undergraduates from Italy attend McGill. So it's not a large number of undergraduate students, but it increases in the graduate level. And they're across most of the faculties at the university. So there are great collaborations between individual faculties and Italian institutions, including in Bari. Our Faculty of Agriculture has a connection to the center in Valenzano. So there is a strong connection in some areas of research. Are there any other questions from the audience? Yes, in the back.
I'm one of the Italian PhD students you mentioned. I have a better understanding of how a student, let's say not postdoc, but a PhD enrolled, can be used as a resource within a FP7 program, let's say, which handles, let's say, we find a Canadian partner, which may be McGill, for example, who cooperates with European partners to form to succeed in a project proposal. For FP7, how the PhD in this case can contribute, can be in the play as a resource. How to translate this in practice?
It's an interesting question. One of the things that does happen with university researchers when they establish contacts with other laboratories, in particular in Europe, is that there's an exchange of students. We have opportunities at McGill for students to enroll from other universities here as graduate trainees. That's the title that's used, and it covers our insurance and all the risk factors that we were talking about before. So it allows for foreign PhD students to come and work in laboratories here, And at the same time, we send students to work in laboratories where there are joint collaborations already existing. We spent a lot of time today talking about the framework program and principal investigators and the ways in which they go about doing it, a little bit of time on the fact that industry has a strong connection. We didn't talk much about students in general or mobility programs associated with them, except just now in terms of the ability to, where there's a network already existing, to share the training of graduate students and to learn new techniques and to and have new opportunities. So there are those opportunities within the funding that we have for our professors, that professors win in research competitions, and part of it can be to facilitate through these networks those kinds of exchanges. There continue to be issues related to the recognition of what a degree in one country means in another country, how universities accept individuals into their programs, how researchers can, how individuals who finish their studies can be accepted into the research communities in another country, and we're still working on a lot of those issues. Increasingly, universities are moving to systems that the French invented called co-tutelle, in Italian I guess it's co-tutela, which is to try to have joint degree programs that allow for that kind of mobility right up front, that you know you're going to be working at two different universities in two different research settings in order to develop your individual career, making you a valuable entity, hopefully not only in those two countries, but around the world. And we also need to work, I think, a bit more on understanding the mechanisms that are in play for truly encouraging student mobility at all levels, not just at the graduate level, but those are other international exchanges. And I think we've pretty much exhausted where we wanted to go with our panel this afternoon. Is there one more question in the back? Yes, sorry.
Thank you. I'm Ellen Aitken. I'm Dean of the Faculty of Religious Studies here. And my question follows upon Professor Zavetti's question, but want to focus not so much in terms of social sciences, but humanities. Culture, art, music, literatures, and I'm really not hearing very much from you about that, and you answer things in terms of social sciences. And knowing the importance of the cultural heritage of Italy, my own field is early Christianity, Paleocristianismus, I'm having existing research partnerships with Italy in our faculty. I'd be curious to hear whether there are particular programs that focus on cultural and historical dimensions.
My answer I don't mean to be pedantic about it, because I appreciate the difference between social sciences and humanities, but the funding theme within the framework program lumps the social sciences and humanities together. One thing that maybe it's important to, maybe people are familiar with this, but the calls for proposals within the framework program are quite a bit different than applying for a SHRT grant, for example. Carol mentioned the work program at some point. Each theme comes out each year with what they call a work program, which is really a long series of specific calls for proposals that target very specific subject matter. So some of those within the social sciences and humanities theme would target cultural issues and much more humanities-focused issues. That's how it's managed within the framework program. And then again, the same answer for the mobility types of grants, which would be open. So.
Actually, again, our program is also open to different kind of research projects, but there's also some calls for proposals, actually. We managed to fund together about 10 projects, and some of them are in the, let's say, on the cultural side. I don't have the list with me today, but I know there is some funding available, and it's actually, they are, these calls for proposals can be found on the website of the Ministère des Relations Internationales. If you type Italy, then you'll find probably the information about it. I mean, I don't know that we're going to have one that's going to be next year, I think, because we've just managed to do it in November, actually. Yeah. So there is still some possibility on that side, but it's not a big amount of money, but can help you to do something great.
If I may, I'd just like to compliment the responses from our panelists. I'm just curious, are you looking are you looking to continue research? Are you looking for conferences? Or what are you seeking to accomplish?
For joint research projects, for conferences, for student mobility, and cultural exhibition. An exposition.
Excellent. Okay, because this is exactly the sort of thing that the Understand Canada program also does. What it is, again, it's tailored to foreign applicants, but to work in conjunction with a Canadian counterpart. So if you're doing joint research, as you mentioned, you also have partners which are abroad, that might be a proposal that you could submit under one of our program components. For example, one of them, we're very, very focused on culture, humanities, law. We see a lot of great projects coming from Europe with those thematics under those main over topics in those faculties. So if you're interested in actually doing joint research or doing a conference or doing an exhibit on culture and things like that, provided there's eligibility criteria that need to be met and there's a Canadian component also, or there's a comparative study which is actually conducted with your counterpart on an aspect of Canadian culture or things like that, you'd be an ideal candidate also for the program. And there's various program components which are there for enhancing student mobility, for having conferences, for actually having doctoral students come and study with you. So there's a whole bunch of great programs. And again, those are available through the scholarship site on the Foreign Affairs site. So again, it's www.scholarships.gc.ca where you can filter it down. Or you can go directly and do a Google query for Understanding Canada program, which will link you directly to our website. And those are programs which are specifically tailored, again, for the humanities and for culture, because we're extremely focused on culture as well for that component.
Oh, yes.
Just one thing, actually. I mean, I know at McGill you have a wonderful bureau for research and international relations. Actually, when there are some calls for proposals that we receive, let's say within the Quebec government, but I know on the federal level this is the same thing. We send the information to your office, and usually, my understanding is that they're supposed to disseminate this information, so that might, or maybe they post it on their website, probably. Yeah. They do both, so that's another source of information.
Well, I'd like to just take this opportunity to thank the panelists for giving us a really rich understanding of things that were floating around in our minds but not always that clear. So I really appreciate the opportunity that we had today to hear from the panelists about the exchanges that are possible for researchers, some of the opportunities for mobility, and some of the opportunities to tap into resources that some people obviously need to know more about. So thank you very much for your participation, and everyone is welcome to join us outside for refreshments of sorts. And I'd like to first really thank Francesca Mancinini for having taken the initiative to organize it. And do please take the opportunity to network.